Welcome, everybody. Episode 32 of Rack Addicts After Hours. Once again, in our favourite pub, and indeed after hours, I'm joined by Telmo, who's making some excellent foley for the background. We've got Pete, and we've got Owen in the background. He may chip in. We may be able to hear him. What's everybody been doing recently? Telmo first, because Pete's pointing the finger, and, you know, he's a little stressful.
I'll do it.
Oh, he will. Hello, Telmo.
Hi.
What have you been up to?
Well, this week, I've been doing some of the production stuff that I've told you guys last week, as I'm working with this mate of mine, Eden Lewis II. He's working
the
on...
The second. Is that his title, name? Was he christened the second?
I think his dad was Eden Lewis I.
Right.
Therefore, he's the second.
Is he a monarch? Anyway.
Anyway.
Sorry for derailing you.
That's okay. So I've been doing some really funky stuff, some really interesting funky guitars. He's into that Bruno Mars, kind of like Michael Jackson, kind of a bit more modern kind of sound.
There's some good production to be had there.
Yeah. So I was working on the guitars. Obviously, there's still quite a lot of synths to be added. I've been getting some patches for my Reface CX. So I've been working on some really cool brass patches, taking pictures of it, putting them on a folder. It's the only way you can do it. I mean,
there is a software for it that
I know.
You can save patches with. Why not do that?
I just, do you know what? I just found the software because I've used it last week. See if I could get around with it. The thing is that it's a bit laggy, you know, and when you press the sync button, it actually doesn't sync properly as it should, not all the time. So I just got fed up with it, and I
was
just
old-school pictures of it.
Yeah, I would just rather actually just play with it and see whatever, you know, what the filter does exactly to that particular sound, and therefore kind of go from there. So I've been doing that. What else I've been doing? I've finally got rid of Spotify.
He's jumped ship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Spotify man. Mm. Why would I want this service that you have picked up?
Mm. Well, the thing is that I've started to be really fed up with Spotify from the point that they the software that I was using for my iMac, it just became so laggy. It was crashing all the time, and it was really putting me off Spotify. And the same thing was happening to me on my phone, and I was like, there's got to be some other ways. I was just wondering to myself, you know, there's got to be some other streaming services out there. When a mate of mine, Jack Noak,
is that the Jack that I sold a Nord to that one time?
That's the Jack.
Ah, that Jack. Cool.
Yeah.
Hey, Jack, how you doing?
Yeah, man. So he's such a great player. He's he's also doing a master's at Guildhall. He showed me this thing. He came over and he was like, listen, I bought these headphones, and I'm using Tidal. And I was like, Tidal? Never heard of that streaming service. And he was he's just put on a tune, and I just got completely struck by the fact that the quality of sound was so much better. Of course, the headphones also helped, because they were the £250 handmade headphones in New York.
That'll help. Grotto. Grotto Labs.
Grotto, yeah, that's right.
Sam, who's been on the podcast before, and I both have some Grotto headphones. They're really good. If you're American, it's Grado.
Grado. I really like them, I particularly enjoy the fact that Tidal gives you all the credits and all the players in whatever song you're listening to. So I decided to give it a go. There's obviously a 30-day free trial, and because I'm a student, I can get 50% off whatever subscription I'm in. I'm paying for the hi-fi subscription, which allows me to get the exact.
That's where that high quality is.
Yeah. You need to go for the full thing. Getting the hi-fi version really allows you to get the exact master of most of the tunes that you hear from the Beatles. It's got everything that Spotify does and iTunes and stuff, but it just gives you that audiophile extra kind of knowledge that you want to know, like who produced it, a little information about the albums, stuff like that, which is really great on top of the great audio quality. You really can hear the separation where the instruments should go, and I'm really pleased with my kind of, like, it just gives it a different fresh air, like a different perception in music in general. I'm really enjoying it. Exploring.
So a bit like owning CDs, basically.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. Yeah, actually, the sample rate is the same as CDs.
It's like having CDs, but on your phone.
Do you know what a CD is, dear listener?
No, it's It's made out of some kind of clay. Is it? You can buy them if you go deep into the distant past from a shop called HMB?
B for Barbara.
No, we're all CD people at one point. My car only runs on CDs. Yep. I can't plug in a little 3.5, so I don't have Bluetooth either. Mm. So yeah, it's like mixtapes. Well, it's not mixtapes, but it's close enough. Yeah. Making little compilation CDs.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. So an investment you think is worth it then, tell me.
It was really worth it. And I totally just advise everyone that's just are in a kind of like a limbo situation. Or just want to try something different.
Mm, they pay the artists a little bit better, don't they?
They do. They're
still not great.
They're second up to just right after Amazon. So you've got Amazon being the number one paid streaming service for musicians, and the second one is Tidal, which is
bad.
I think 0.004.
No, don't depress us. We don't want to know.
Still, so much better than Spotify.
Are there some major artists behind it in the launch of it?
Yeah, so Jay-Z is the owner of Tidal,
and the whole high definition audio was there. Part of the mantra, wasn't it, of launching?
Yeah, that's their biggest selling point, is having a really good, high-quality mastering versions of albums and of thousands of albums, really. And it's not just because Jay-Z owns it, it's not hip-hop focused. There's a lot of jazz, and that's what I'm really glad of.
Have you not been able to find anything on there?
No. Everything, Portuguese, Greek music, Brazilian music, everything is in there.
Not bad. I imagine if you use something like DistroKid, you'll easily be able to just push it out to Tidal just the same as
everything nowadays. Yeah. You want to be on as many platforms as possible to just spread it, because the returns are so minimal. Mm. Even doesn't matter what the platform is, that you're just going to want to
get
out
everywhere anybody is. Mm.
Volume.
Yeah.
Definitely. Volume.
Absolutely.
Play the field. Pete, what have you been up to recently?
Right, well, I've been digging hard into my Verona Melodicer.
The Melodicer.
Yeah, I had kind of left it alone a bit. I don't know if you guys recall, and certainly spoke about it quite a few podcasts ago when I actually got it, that the manual was sparse to say the least. And it was clearly, or I felt it was also been translated from another language, which I assume was German.
Verona's German, I think.
Yeah,
so
there was a distinct... English wasn't the first language of the person who wrote this. So I kind of had left it, and then it was time to sort of dig into some of the crunchy things, like saving patterns and things like that. Because with a lot of modular stuff, I've realised that it's the more subtle moves where you get the more dramatic effects or the more interesting things happening. So the very almost unnoticeable little tweaks of the...
Yeah, modulating your modulations and having that really subtle movement can really bring it out. Yeah.
So it really is... I knew it was going to be a very interesting... I'll describe it as an instrument. And in fact, it does say in the documentation you should play it like an instrument. So I've been really digging in deep with that and getting some really good results. But then you go, I need to save this. I can't. This is too good to lose. So I spent some time. It's not that difficult, but it had eluded me because there's a minimal amount of buttons and some of them are multifunction and so forth. So I've figured out how to save. You can save up to 16 patterns.
Yeah. Okay. It'll be the bane of any menuless device is the combination button press.
Yeah, well, the actual way of saving and then recalling them is quite straightforward once you've got it locked into your mind. So, I've been doing a bit of that. I've been patiently still waiting for the Soma Labs delivery, the Lyra 8 kit. And I've actually written to Max at Soma Labs to sort of... Nothing too overly sort of aggressive or anything like that. Just said it's been, I think it was 15 days ago it left Russia, and nothing's appeared in the UK. So I kind of just said, is this normal? Is this what I should be expecting? And he sent me something back, which I haven't fully read, but it does look like it's from Russia to Europe. It's up to 4 to 5 weeks.
Oh, really?
I don't know. It's coming by what route it's coming, but I, you know. I mean, I don't even know quite what part of Russia. I know Russia's a very big place, but I can't imagine these sort of... I imagine it's on the west side of Russia.
I think that there might be just some sort of, like, regulations.
Yeah, it'd be logistics things.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's cleared and left the actual export sort of place that it was being exported to the Europe via, but... I don't know what the hold-up is, but I'm still optimistic that it's going to arrive. I'm not particularly fearful that it's not going to arrive. It just seemed like it was an eternity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As usual, once it actually arrives, I'll just put it to one side and just go into a pile with all the other kits that are there. Yeah, so...
Do I have a question, actually? With the Melodicer, do you reckon you'll still pick up that Omsonic thing?
Yes.
If and when... Ooh.
Yes, definitely. But there's still... Pairing. I'm still checking... relatively regularly, not every day like I do.
You're in the queue for that, aren't you?
Well, in theory, I am. I wrote to them and they wrote back and said, we'll let you know when they're available. But they did sort of suggest that they were having supply problems for parts. Mm. But things are generally improving all round, so I'm not quite sure where they are with it. I might inquire, give it another month or so, and maybe give them another tap up and see what's going. Yeah. But In fact, I checked this weekend past and it didn't say anything different. It just said coming soon still. I suspect it works in a very similar way to the Melodicer, but I really want to know. And also, you can do with an expander, you can do four separate.
That was the killer feature, I think, comparing the two, wasn't it?
Yeah, the trouble is, one, the Melodicer's got the memory, and the other one's got the multi-parts. It's a shame that there's one with both features.
Yeah.
But there's no reason why I couldn't end up with both synchronized and utilize them.
Mm-hmm. Quite a killer patch.
I'm not, you know, they're. For what they do, I think they're reasonably inexpensive, so I'm not that fazed. I'll get both and see how we get on. But
of course.
Yes.
Yeah. Can I ask you something? I'm pretty sure that some of our listeners might be wondering. Any news about the summit?
The summit, okay.
We need to know about that.
There's a saga involved.
Theoretically, and this is only theoretically, I might see it next week.
Oh.
Wait.
Those are good news.
I have spoken to Focusrite. Who own
Focusrite Novation is a one and the same
joint operation.
Did they just merge or did one buy the other?
Oof, no idea.
Okay, but they are the same, essentially the same organisation. So I spoke to Focusrite, and they said that the 23rd of July was the best date they had so far, but there was no guarantees. I think they are struggling to get stuff. Mm. And I think certainly the Novation stuff is made in China.
Mm. Yep.
I can't vouch for where the actual things like Focusrite stuff is made. The Scarlets and the...
Scarlet stuff has got to be China. They're churning it out low price.
But I haven't seen a problem with the supply of those. They seem to be readily available now. I know they're initially...
Then again, we have been buying them in pretty chunky quantities as well.
But we would buy Summits as many as they could supply if they were available.
But it's a different machine, isn't it? The Summit is a completely different.
Yeah, it's quite a large thing. Yeah. I have got no idea what's entailed in their supply chain, but I'm hoping the 23rd, which I think is, if I'm not correct, is that Thursday next week? Yeah, it is Thursday next week. I potentially could be the proud owner of a Summit.
Have you got a space for it? Or are you going to have to kick something out?
I'm possibly going to sell the Peak.
Oh, fair. Yeah.
That makes sense.
For one thing, because...
How much would you sell it to me for?
I'm sure we can come to
it. Stay tuned for negotiations.
Mm. Need a bit of a poly in my life.
Oh, yes, you do.
Mm. But, yeah, so I'm going to... Potentially going to get rid of the Peak. I mean, I know that I'm normally very hard for me to get rid of since of any description, but I think the Summit will suffice.
Mm.
So
it's a great machine. I mean, because there was just that one day before lockdown. It was a relatively normal day. We were just kind of messing with the filter, and something just kind of happened in the shop. I think that might have been when it clicked for actually both of us that it was a little bit more than we had. Thought. So when it was announced, we were like, cool, there's two Peaks, the Peaks are right.
There's definitely a few little bits and bobs. There's an extra bit on the filter, isn't it? Mm. It does that, does it high and low simultaneously?
I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen
some FM stuff that the Peak doesn't have.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if that's a combination of having the two and they're sort of
Maybe, but some of those patches were just...
Well, it's the layering, the fact that you can sort of... It's a bit like having two peaks.
Thing.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was the weakness of the peak, one of the ModCaf chaps, Ian, or the Weathermonger, depending on how you meet him. He has a peak, and he just deleted all the presets when he got his, because they were just boring and just made his own.
I know what he means. Some of them are a bit thin, and it's a bit... Yeah. I'm not that enthralled with the peak, let's put it that way. Now I've heard the summit, you've just got no competition. Yeah.
Nice one. I'm going to fill you in on my week now, because it's
time
for my attention to pay attention to me. Hello.
I'm looking
anyway,
at you, boy.
I have inherited an Xbox 360, which is a big move for me, having never owned a console since the Nintendo Switch very recently. So I'm playing Halo. And it's mine. And
that's amazing.
It's a big moment. A big moment. My parents never let me have a console.
Oh my God. Do you need any more games? Because I've got plenty in the trunk of my car.
Oh, we're going to have words after this podcast.
Yes, I think I've got some in the loft.
No way.
Yeah.
Because Ben's getting the hookup this week.
My son's soul is ripped through so many consoles. And he tends to flog off the console. And then we've got loads of spurious games just floating around still. So I'll have a rummage.
Ooh.
So 360.
360, yeah. Well, 360 Slim or whatever.
Yeah. So
it's been great.
That's a few generations ago, isn't it? 360.
So if you talk about like the main... There's like the main generation, and then there'll be like another version of it. I think it's just a generation back, because there's one that's coming out soon. But then it's, I would say it's going to be maybe 6 or more years old.
Yeah.
At this point, it's
if it's a 360, it will probably be more than that.
Even more than that,
because the Xbox One, it's about 5 to 6 years old.
Ooh,
so the 360 is about 10 years old.
So
right
was
now.
It equivalent to the PlayStation 3? Was that about the same time?
Yeah, same
that's
time.
Correct.
Yeah, so we're going back. But yeah, Halo is one of my favorite game series.
Is that the only game you're playing at the time?
At the moment, because it's all I've bought.
Yeah.
It's been one of those things. I've played it over at a friend's house loads, and I have played through... 1, 2, 3,
yep.
4, and I'm on Reach at the moment, because chronologically, that's the first one. So that's really cool. There's that bit of the old Xbox console life.
I have to ask, what was your parents' objection to gaming?
I don't
was it
know.
Just a distraction to your education or something?
No. I don't know. I guess I'll have to ask.
They just didn't like machines in the house.
I'm not sure. Because I had the first console-like thing, I had a Game Boy Advance SP, which was the square, which had the flip-up screen.
Right.
And was the short cartridges. So there were the options for Pokemon and lots of old good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then a DS Lite. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of it until a few months ago, really.
I was really jealous of my cousin because he had one of those. I hated him.
The SP, the flip-up little screen. You could fit it. Actually, had the most ridiculous headphone connector known to mankind. The proprietary, horrible thing. You couldn't get an adapter. Anyway,
wow.
But anyway, Xbox, just a small thing. One conversation I did have with Telmo before we started today. On the walk to the pub, there's a canal that I walk along, and I was just walking along in the peripheral hearing. There's sort of a kind of a putt-putting of a steam-powered device, and sort of alongside me pulls this steam-powered canal boat thing, and it had a rhythm.
There was a rhythm in there.
It just made this really cool kind of noise. I just had to take a video of it. What I'm going to do is, once Pete has shared this post on Facebook, I'm going to upload a little bit of that video so you can take a listen just in the Facebook comments. So if you all head to Facebook, the Rack Addicts Facebook page, you'll be able to hear what I'm on about. But it was amazing. When we got to this bridge, there's a railway bridge that you go under, which has some really nice reverb. I found out that not only did it have a really cool kind of kick drum thing going on, it had a built-in hi-hat, and it's incredible. So what I'm going to encourage you to do is download this video if you can, and make something from it, because that's what I'm going to do when I get home. It's really cool. Some steam-powered thing. It's a drum kit, and there was this old dude.
That's amazing.
Just, you know, he had a flat cap on. He was leaning back. Arm on the tiller, just, you know, he's winning at life with this rhythm going on.
Sequencing the sounds of the boat.
That would make my day.
Cup of tea in a tin mug. on the go?
No, none of didn't quite get all of the stereotypes there, but he definitely had a flat cap, and he may well have been wearing overalls. I wasn't quite paying attention. Who knows, man? eBay, we're talking maybe half a million. I don't know. Oh. But actually, before everybody else arrived, I was actually Googling where, you know, Steam nerds assemble. I just want to go to like some gathering where people who tinker with traction engines in their back garden. I want to meet all these massive nerds and just record sounds from their steam-powered machines. It was quite inspiring.
I did hear it, and you showed me the video, and I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
It's really cool. I'll show you later, Owen. It's pretty fun. That's all I can think of that's been exciting in terms of my week.
What a week.
Apart from, there was an article, I think it was on Ask Audio, maybe. Some company has replicated some synthesizer, as they do in plugin form. But I did do my research on the synthesizer that they are replicating. There is a company called, I don't know if they're called Knife Audio or Neef Audio. It's spelled K-N-I-F. They make some sort of mastering-y grade-looking outboard stuff. A really weird-looking microphone that, have to say, it's kind of a bit, you know, spiral dildo kind of thing going on, which is not the best.
Looks like a Magnum ice cream as well.
A little bit.
First thing that comes to my head.
But most importantly, because, you know, we love synthesizers here, they make
the Neefonium.
The Neefonium.
Which is, well, it's actually it's $16,000 if you want to buy one. And apparently there may be a production run perhaps in the next 1 to 2 years because of the difficulty getting hold of the 26 vacuum tubes that make the sound.
What?
So it has two oscillators, whatever a fourth order ladder filter is. Maybe that's a four pole? Maybe? I don't really know. This thing looks amazing. So, you know, kind of wooden end cheeks. It's got the vertical panel, the horizontal keyboard. It looks like it's got kind of a gear shift lever on the left, which may be a pitch bend. But I desperately want one and will never have one.
Boys and girls, that looks like a
And is there only one in existence? Have they made?
No, I think there's a few. When they got a batch of tubes, I think they've done some. But the power connector, that's the beefiest power connector I've ever seen.
It looks like a futuristic mini MOOC.
It
does have a vibe, doesn't it?
What a machine. Either way, there is a company that has replicated this in plug-in form, which is probably the closest any of us will ever get to it. But knowing how Erica Synth's tube modules can sound, this will probably rearrange your testicles if you hear it with a subwoofer. I mean,
assuming you have some.
Yeah, assuming you have some ovaries, testicles, whatever.
It's going to
mess with that kind of Oh, wow. I really hope to meet one day. The Neefonium from Neefonium? I don't know.
For
either way,
maniacs.
I'm quite interested in their outboard as well. Maybe I'll show Andy one of these days. That's kind of it from me. Pete, you had a little something you wanted to mention, potentially, that you'd found from your YouTube subscriptions, maybe? I mean, we've got to do our usual weekly YouTube kind of roundup at the end. There is one thing that I did want to kind of direct people at, if I can find it again. Telmo, there was something musical that you were going to mention that wasn't Tidal related.
Yeah, it was probably related to some of the plugins I've been using.
Oh, yes.
As I've been diving into the world of production these days. As you guys know, I'm more of a guitarist, but doing production is something that really fills my boots and really makes me be proud of just what I do in general. I've been using this, as you guys know, I'm a UAD guy.
He's
I use all
UAD
the Universal
life.
Audio stuff. And I've got the Moog, or Moog, depends how you say it, the multi-mode filter collection, which is currently going for £189. I'm lucky enough to have all of the plugins. And I've been using it for some of my guitar lines and some of my guitar work. And I find it quite interesting how
you have like LFO control over it and other things.
Exactly. Yeah. So it gives it quite a different. It's something that I've always been interested in, is joining synthesis with an organic instrument and guitar in general. And I've managed to get this. There's this one particular sound that I really got, apart from, you know, the really crazy swirls that you can get. There's this really cool kind of like stereo kind of like sway, kind of phasing sound that I've managed to get off the of one of the plugins. I think it's the let's see if I can find it.
That's the advantage of all that digital emulation. You can go stereo kind of Moog stuff.
Exactly.
Oh man, it's the real pub atmosphere today. I got a Beetle in my beer. Oh, disaster.
I think you should eat it.
Extra protein.
So yeah, it's such a powerful filtering tool. The cool thing is that I managed to get like this whole section of the chorus of with this guy that I've been working. The whole chorus is just a really funky guitar, but obviously because I've managed to get the filter swirling.
Yeah, giving that extra juice.
Yeah, quite a long swirl, and it just goes in and out of the mix really nicely. And I think this is such a nice way to get into synthesis if you're not. If you're just, you know, you're a regular musician that just wants, you know, you're a guitar player, you're on an experiment with sounds, you know, you don't know much about synthesis, but you might want to think about getting a synthesizer, you know, maybe experiment with plugins, or, you know, it doesn't have to be the Universal Audio stuff. It could be something that, you know, you found for free of, you know, an offer of Sound Toys or anything. Maybe it could be something off your Logic Pro X.
The auto filter, the classic.
The auto filter.
That's a really good point, actually, though, because a lot of entry level synthesizers will still have an audio input for you to process things through. Could be a guitar, but I mean, a resonant filter is going to be really familiar to a lot of guitarists, because that's basically what a wah pedal is going to be.
You can use it as an auto wah, and you can add an LFO. You can add resonance. It can turn into a phaser. It can turn into a vibrato. You can do so much stuff, and you really get the sense of how synthesis works, and all the modulation works. So I would totally recommend, if you're into your kind of like early days and you're really discovering synthesis, try with plugins first. And this is Owen's idea, and we were just chatting about it before we did the whole podcast. I think it's a good way of starting. What do you think, Pete? Would you go for hardware or software at first?
Well, I'm a bit of a sucker for hardware, as everyone knows. I mean, I spent years just playing around in the box with software, especially when my children were very small, because little fingers tend to get into where they're not wanted. So it was a lot easier just to work with software for a long time. But as soon as I was liberated from that, it was straight back to sort of accumulating ridiculous amounts of hardware.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a good way to start.
Yeah.
It's definitely a good way to start, especially if you're on a budget.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of there's quite a lot of free synth plugins.
If you want a DX7, just get Dext. That's got DX7. Well, it is just DX7 replica, and you can use any kind of what they call them, ROMs or something, online. So you can get the original patch set quite easily, and you can just have a DX7 to hand for free.
Well, that's amazing. I need to write that down, I'm afraid.
D-E-X-E-D, Dext, or D-Z. If you're
plugin.
Trying to, I don't know. But it's great, you know. You just go, oh, I want that 180s piano from every single power ballad ever, and just there it is. It's great.
There we go.
Quite complicated if you do want to kind of dive into FM. You can do that, but it's all about presets for me.
Well, FM's always complicated for most people, isn't it? Even on a DX7.
Yeah, it's the whole algorithm system, isn't it? It's quite, because it's like
it seems sort
blocks.
Of logical when someone explains it to you, but then 5 minutes later you've forgotten.
I'll leave it to Amy from the ModCaf. She's really got a handle on that kind of stuff. She's spent too much time in pure data.
Yeah.
Nah, she really knows that.
It's really interesting.
Pete's hanging on YouTube. What have you got?
Right. This is a new one to me. I only found it a couple of weeks ago, and it was cropping up in my sort of, you know, your YouTube stream that they present you with.
No, recommended.
And I didn't really sort of pay attention. Then I watched one of the videos, and it was absolutely delightful. So the title of the channel is Harry Dwyer. Dwyer? D-W-Y-E-R.
Uh-huh. Hmm. Yeah.
And this gentleman has been doing videos for a number of years, sort of random ones, but then he's started doing a series where he's going round the coast of the UK in a small speedboat.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, literally a very small speedboat, a two-seater. It's almost like being in a small open-top sports car. And they just literally do a 10, 15 mile, 20 mile stretch, and they'll pull over a couple of times. I mean, it differs from the different types of weather, and they're not doing it within a particular time scale. It's just seem to be doing it when it's practical. But the one that I've watched, and I will be watching a lot more, was a small section of the Cornish coast that they did.
Oh,
and
I
sort
do
of,
love that coast.
And the sort of places they're able to pull up aren't the places that the public can actually access, because there's no actual footpaths or any way to get down to these really secluded sort of beaches. They do go into the sort of small towns and the ports that you...
They do kind of little history bits about the area.
Yeah, the whole bit. They visited an island which is historically goes back to Tudor times.
Oh, nice.
It's a fortified island, and a gentleman has bought it for... several millions of pounds, and he's hoping to convert it to a sort of luxury hotel and spa, but it's still in its sort of semi-derelict state at the moment. And they were going around all the sort of ammunition stores. It still has some of the artillery is still there. So it's a sort of large sort of cast cannons, a sort of transition before they sort of... The period where they were still, I assume, front-loading cannons, but they're not the modern ones with the recoil. But they're just all there, and they came with the property. So this guy's...
But I'm actually looking to move at the moment. I'm just imagining. Obviously, it's like, you know, two bedrooms, Juliet balcony, ensuite included.
Three cannons.
three front-loading cannons to defend your property.
But, so the whole... They spent time getting a guided tour from the owner. That was nice. Then they went round to a secluded beach, and there seemed to be loads of other people doing the same sort of locals with these boats. And then they all sort of race back to the local port. So I can't remember where they... But they all went back to the same one. And it was just... And I suppose it was the particular video I was watching, the weather was idyllic. So it was most probably... Well, back in May when we had some really good weather, the sea was just like a mirror almost. It was absolutely... But nice. I'll be watching more, and I definitely recommend it, because the production was quite good. He certainly has a lot of... It's one of these videos initially you think, oh, it's just somebody with a GoPro, and then you realise he really has got a lot of cameras, and there's a lot of production quality and effort being put in, so... Yes,
and what a lovely place to be doing this.
Well,
the Cornish coast.
That was that particular one, but it looks like he's going around the whole coast of the UK. So, the title of the particular series that he's running is 1,700 Miles in a Tiny Speedboat, Part 1.
Yeah,
that's the particular one that I'm looking at the moment. So, and it's to continue. So it's quite fresh. I think he's only done a few episodes so far. So it's... if people want to get involved and keep up to his escapade.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
I've got one actually kind of similar lines, because there's a lot of really nice camera work, lots of great sort of landscape shots. A guy called Craig Adams, that's Craig with a K. I believe he's Canadian, but he makes hiking videos. I think he's a videographer as his kind of day job. So his videos are things like hiking 60 miles alone in Iceland, hiking 14,000 feet in Colorado with my brother, 80 miles alone in Chile or something. But it's all lots of kind of drone shots, so big old sweeping landscape things. You can just see little tiny him with his orange windproof jacket thing, just kind of slowly plodding away. But he does some really, really nice cinematography. It's obviously his kind of passion there. And he records a lot of the audio, and it's all just really quiet sounds of nature and just footsteps. And they're really peaceful, really excellent kind of landscape stuff going on. And they're really relaxing to watch. Some of them can be up to half an hour long, just watching him hike somewhere. Just doesn't sound very interesting, but it's a really, really great one. So that's Craig Adams.
No, I think it's especially if it's got a high level of production quality. And I have to say that YouTube's come a long way Obviously, it can support some very high definition stuff, but the production.
That also depends on, obviously, the views that the channel has or the video, because even if you try and upload an HD and if your channel only has a couple of subscriptions,
there's the length limit. Like, you have to have a certain amount of videos before you're allowed to upload over 10 minutes or something.
But you're right. I mean, the quality in YouTube really gotten so much better.
Yes, and there's just a lot of good producers out there.
Definitely. The amount of knowledge you can gain from all the tutorials on there. I've been a YouTube, kind of big YouTube person for, I think, about 7 or 8 years. It's just great.
No, I have to say, it's my main form of entertainment. We've got quite a few subscription services at home, but I tend to just gawp at YouTube all the time.
Yeah, I mean, my other half has been on Instagram for forever, and that's her thing, and I've just always been YouTube. That's my happy place.
Yeah.
Telmo, it's time for your weekly YouTube recommendation.
All right.
Cool. What you got?
So my YouTube recommendation for this week, it's absolutely the opposite of what you guys were.
Good. Spice is the variety of life.
Absolutely.
Or wait. Anyway.
That's what they say, isn't it? If not, please let us know. The channel that I have today, it's Marc Rebillet.
How do we spell it?
So M-A-R-C.
That was not the difficult bit that I was asking about.
Space. R-E-B-I-L-L-E-T.
Gotcha.
Rebillet.
Ooh.
For the French.
That accent, though.
Beautiful. This is quite a channel. I really don't know where to start about a persona. I guess if you just go on YouTube and if you write his name, you will kind of get like a picture of from his first 5 to 6 videos. You kind of get a picture of the guy. He's basically got a mustache. He's got glasses.
Excellent. I'm sold already.
He's kind of like a DJ live looping in the same sense of Reggie Watts kind of thing. So he's got his setup. It seems to me from the videos that I've watched, he's got a loop station, an RC-404 or a 505.
505 is the desktop one with the big round squishy buttons.
It could be either one of them. And he's got an Ovation keyboard connected to it. It seems like he's getting his MIDI sounds from his laptop. Mm-hmm. So he's looping stuff on the go. And he does this sort of like really crazy DJ kind of like live sets on the go, but he's the sort of guy that it's like it's got the Freddie Mercury persona on stage. That's a big bar to clear. I know, but I'm not afraid of saying it. He's the sort of guy that goes a kimono on stage. He wears just a robe, and he just goes absolutely bonkers. He goes mental. He's got this really funny video called Girls Club, and he's literally in a cafe. What it looks to me about, you know, something like lunchtime, like 12 o'clock, and he's singing. He's making this beat and singing the song about he wants to be part of this girls' club, but this girl doesn't let him because he doesn't know the password, and he asks them if they're all having sex there. And it's all, like, very... I don't know. I guess you just have to watch it to really understand.
You just got to experience it to figure it out for yourself.
It's crazy. He's got like loads of live shows. He's this sort of like YouTuber that started only like doing live streams on YouTube, and then eventually he got so big that he's got Erykah Badu on his show, and now he's doing like shows in Amsterdam. He's got like plenty of gigs. He can fill out a whole venue. It's insane. The guy is so big. For this new generation, it's really... He's got a song called The Cremation Song. Don't ask me. Just Google it or YouTube it and just find out for yourself if you really want to be struck by the brilliancy of Marc Rebillet. So this is my YouTube recommendation. I would like to leave you with a book as well.
Ooh, yes, please. We haven't done a book before, have we?
I don't think so. Have we?
Analog media. Ooh,
it's those ones.
It's a bit of a reach, Telmo. I don't know if our audience can handle that.
Yeah.
Oh, if it's on Kindle, it's fine.
You can get it on Kindle as well. I actually have paper, physical paper
from a tree.
Mm.
Wow.
From that store that you've mentioned, HMB.
Oh yeah.
Humbu.
Mm, yes.
So, yeah, I bought it on that store. I bought it on HMV for about £4. It was an offer, and I had no clue. I've watched the movie. It's a 1968 Stanley Kubrick movie. 2001, The Space Odyssey.
I didn't know there was a book. Well, so I've learned something today.
Yeah. So the movie is based on a book written by Arthur C. Clarke.
What? How did I know? I love Arthur C. Clarke. What?
He's amazing.
Okay, I'm going to have to borrow that from you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I've got a book for you. Japonisme. Remember that one?
We should totally do that.
We've got to do the trade. Yeah. Anyway, carry
on. Give me a couple of weeks so I can finish it. Mm. I'm about halfway. So, obviously, if you haven't watched the movie, go and do it now.
That's an experience.
That's quite an experience. If you're into sci-fi, basically, 2001 Space Odyssey is the birth of sci-fi, is what defined the genre, I think, from my perspective. But the book gives you a different insight into the some of the chapters of that you might think of. I mean, there's different details. There's given things that you get in the book that you don't get on the movie, at least on the first time you watch it. Not even on the second time. Maybe on the third one. and it's a 3-hour movie.
It's an epic. You gotta be awake for that.
I totally recommend it. I'm about on that little stage where Hal gets. You know, a whole chapter about him.
I'm afraid I can't do that, David.
Exactly.
Is it Dave? David?
Yeah,
I can't remember. Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that, Telmo.
Oh my god, I'm getting shivery now. It's a really, really good book. I've been having a lot of fun reading it, and I totally recommend it. That's basically it. I mean, I don't want to spoil it to everyone, but if you're into sci-fi, you need to know about this.
You'll have to get yourself a copy of Rendezvous with Rama.
Mm, okay.
That's another one by Arthur C. Clarke.
Okay. I'm gonna make sure I remember that.
Childhood's End.
Also by Arthur C. Clarke?
It could be. It's one of those ones that, you know, I've got the book at home and I keep forgetting who the author is. And this is the time where I do the rapid Googling while also trying to speak at the same time. Let's see if I can do it, ladies and gentlemen. I think I have. It is Arthur C. Clarke, so I've done very well. Childhood's End is the... I think that'd be my favourite one. Until the big reveal, and then it's really disappointing.
Yeah.
But that's definitely worth it, because that's the best kind of build-up to any kind of reveal in any film, book I've ever experienced. Childhood's End, excellent. Really good stuff. My favorite book of all time is War of the Worlds. So if you haven't been there, you've got to do it. So for the first time ever, Rack Addicts After Hours is remending.
That's a good
remending.
Word.
Remending. What remending. A new word. Recommending. Word. I missed half of the middle of that thing. Anyway, we are recommending that you go and fondle some paper pages and read some really excellent sci-fi.
Do it. It's good for
Thank
your head.
Thank you very much for listening. And I will remind you again to check us out on Facebook, because I'll be posting that one rhythmic canal boat. Rhythmic canal boat video for you to sample on Facebook. Rack Addicts After Hours. You know who we are and where we are. Thank you for listening. We will catch you, or you will catch us, next week. Farewell!